everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two lovely sponsors for you here to mention at the top of the show. Environments for Humans are doing their responsive web design summit. That's rwdsummit.com. Coming up in about a month. That's March 10th through 12th. Use discount code SHOPTALK for 20% off the ticket for that. Both Dave and I will be at that. You should definitely come. And a new sponsor, Envision, envisionapp.com. The URL you want to go for that is envisionapp.com/signup/ShopTalk, which will get you 3 months for free. It's a really cool tool that I look forward to telling you more about later in the show. But envisionapp.com/signup/ShopTalk is the URL for that. Let's kick things off.
Shopomaniacs, I hope you got your boots on today. Oh, awful. I'm Dave Rupert, and he's Chris Goyer.
Hey, why did I say that, everybody, Chris? I don't know, because I never know what you're going to say after the intro, and it always takes me off guard. But we have with us Mr. Mark Otto. Hey, Mark.
Yo, yo.
Yeah.
Excited to be here, guys.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for coming out.
I gotta say, I'm big fans of yours.
Oh, that's nice of you to say. We're bigger fans back at you. I think the world is too. If they realize all the things that you've done, I think more people have probably used work that you've touched than any of us could ever dream of. Really, between
I don't know CSS tricks, man.
Well, that's great for developers, but Twitter, GitHub, Bootstrap, man, these are big things. So if you don't know Mark, I guess we could have Mark give his own story. I mean, right? I mean, is the short version Twitter then GitHub? And I don't know. Maybe you tell it.
Can you give us the brand deck for yourself?
Sure. I mean, I dropped out of college from Wisconsin, hashtag Wisconsin.
Did you really?
I'm going to go for brands here. And I moved out to California here. And I started at this design agency down in the South Bay called Zurb. I worked there for 2.5 years, then Twitter, 2.5 years there, and now GitHub, where I've been for almost 2.5 years.
Wow, that's like the thing. So, that's interesting. I didn't realize, because Foundation is Zurb, and now people can't mention Bootstrap without also saying comma Foundation. It's one of those things. It's like node/IO. You know, it's like one of those words that gets combined together, and I wonder if... But the foundation wasn't even a dream when you were there, probably.
No, the stuff that I'd worked on at Zurb was a lot of client things, a couple of our internal products that we were just starting up, and then the Zurb style guide and things like that. But foundation wasn't a thing until after I left.
Yeah, interesting. And then, and I'm sure you work on. So you're at GitHub now, and like, do you still is Bootstrap is such a huge project? Is the point, I guess? And it's open source, which requires a bunch of maintenance and stuff. Is that still like a big part of your day, or is GitHub a bigger part of your day?
I try to keep GitHub the bigger part of my day. Mm-hmm. I love Bootstrap. I love working on it. I love rewriting it for major versions. Mm-hmm. I love being able to help people on the internet do things that maybe they otherwise couldn't or couldn't do as well or couldn't do as quickly. But I definitely try to focus on the GitHub thing since that's what they're paying me to be here for. But GitHub's very flexible in that we obviously love open source. A lot of us contribute to open source. So they know that part of having a successful product and me being a product designer and developer, I need to be using it and working with it. And, you know, part of the community outreach and stuff like that. It all matters. So I do get to work on Bootstrap whenever I can.
Nice. Cool. Maybe let's do we have a few questions here and there about Bootstrap and stuff, but I think that's like, as I was looking through the questions on Shop Talk Show, I can sometimes when I'm, you know, have a particular guest on and I'm picking out questions, I search for certain keywords that are relevant, you know, like accessibility or whatever. But I was like, well, we're having Mark on. Maybe I'll see, you know, what kind of questions we have about Bootstrap in here. And there's like, it's like 25% of every question that we get. Like it just 2000. Has it somewhere. It's, cool it's not specifically about Bootstrap, but it'll just mention it in some kind of context because it's almost it's like a verb practically, or I don't know if that's the right. But Dave has even used it as a bit of a verb because it's like Dave has an article one time you wrote that called for clients to be like, what we deliver these days is mini bootstraps. You know, like maybe we don't use bootstrap directly, but what we deliver to clients is kind of a system instead of a thing. Anyway, I'd just be interested to hear the story of Bootstrap, I guess, like what the idea came from and if you had any dream of what it became today and what you kind of think of it.
Yeah. Sure. Like, so at Zurb, we started making a lot of style guides. We started doing it for all of our clients because it was easier to give them a handful of pages and then a generic way to make more pages and components if things are properly documented and shown to them. So we started making HTML and CSS style guides to go with the stuff that we'd hand off to them. After I left Zurb, I went to work at Twitter. And at Twitter, I was working on the ads team. I designed the promoted tweets badge and all the this a couple of versions of the advertiser tools for running campaigns on Twitter. And I started doing that a lot. And a lot of that stuff was still kind of up in the air. This is early 2010. And they figured out that we wanted to run ads on Twitter, but not exactly how they would look or how they behave. So I spent a lot of time doing those things, but I also had a lot of downtime. I was kind of free to float with other teams. So I was working with the support team. I was working with our internal tools team. I was working with a bunch of other teams. Everyone had questions and needed design help, needed front-end help, trying to make things look Twittery, mm-hmm. quote-unquote Twittery. And I started making OmniGraffle stencils. Either of you guys ever used OmniGraffle?
Yeah.
OmniGraffle was pretty great if only for one reason, the stencils and the templates, where you could just have a window open on the side of your screen, click on a pre-made thing, drag it and drop it, and boom, you've got a copy of that. I feel like it's even faster than some of the sketch things that I've been doing lately, but it wasn't pixel perfect, but it was super useful for all these other people to make wireframes that had never used, say, Photoshop or HTML and CSS or anything like that. So a lot of people in the company started using those kind of things, which was super helpful for them to do like one sheets and things like that. So I got on this thing of like helping people out by making up more things, right? And I realized that more people wanted internal tools type stuff, actual like web apps. And we needed one on the ads team as well. So we started building one. It was called Finch, like the bird. And we started building that one thing, and I started documenting pieces of it as I was building it. So as I was adding the buttons, the tables, the forms, the nav bar, I would copy paste, put it in another repo. And I started just putting in some quick little docs on like what this is and why you might use it. And these are similar things that I've been doing all along with style guides, right? That's how those work. And it wasn't until at least 6 months later, maybe more, that I actually had like a working V1. And we had our first hack week at Twitter, and there was around 300 people at the company, I want to say. And you know, you do all your hack week, you get your teams together. You might send out something ahead of time that says, "Hey, I'm working on this." I sent out one that said, "Hey guys, I made this thing." It's at the time it was called the Twitter Blueprint. If you're building anything on the front end, maybe check it out. It might help you make your hack week project easier. And I heard back from like two people throughout the week, and I helped them out, and it was great. I thought it was a huge success. And the part where it started taking off where I became really interested in continuing to maintain it was at the end of Hack Week during all the presentations, where there was about 80 teams that were presenting and over half of them were built with Bootstrap. And none of them had to come talk to me about it. None of them had any questions around how to use it because it was all documented and things like that. So that for me was the first part where I was just like, holy crap, this thing's got legs. And from there, we open sourced it. Maybe a year later, it took some time, mm-hmm. but we got it done.
So at one time, it really was Twitter Bootstrap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Because at some point, not like these days, you try not to refer to it as that. It's just called Bootstrap now, right? Just because you left and you still maintain it.
Yeah, we called it Twitter Bootstrap. I mean, I think a couple of reasons why I was so successful and the way it took off the way it did is it's HTML and CSS, which are the most basic building blocks for writing things on the internet, right? And mm-hmm. then it had Twitter's name on it, and that certainly did not hurt.
Right.
And we were there. It was myself and my buddy Jacob were the ones that wrote all the HTML and CSS and JavaScript for it. There was a handful of other folks at the company, but we took it with us when we left, basically, and we moved it out of the Twitter org on GitHub, and now it's its own thing. So we try not to list Twitter in there, just so there's no confusion about who is putting time into it, but definitely thankful for being able to do it at Twitter. So
yeah, that's really cool. It's cool of them that they were fine with that too, you know. Sometimes mm-hmm. people have dumb clauses in their work things that are like, anything you ever do belongs to the company while you're here and stuff. And
which you could also cool. say like, okay, here's 2,000 open issues. We'll see you later. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Have fun with that.
Yeah. Right.
I see that regularly. So, but you've experienced it absolutely blowing up and becoming probably the biggest style guide. Or do you still think of it as a style guide? Or, I mean, people call it a framework. How do you talk about it?
I think of the docs as a style guide for sure. And I also consider our documentation kind of like the core of the product, if I wanted to call it a product at all. It's the thing that we build and that we have to market and that we sell, right? It's like, this is how you use it. These are the components and things like that. But it definitely, that's the third reason why I think it was successful was its approachability. Like if you looked at anything else at the time, there was like the kitchen sink style things for Blueprint CSS, where it was listed out a bunch of the components, but it didn't go that much deeper. And I don't think anything else was out there doing these kind of things either, where it gave you a live example, snippet of code. It seems so trivial, but I think that was just huge for the project. And I call it style guide, I call it framework, I call it toolkit, I call it mm-hmm. project, I call it a lot of other things. I'm frustrated with it.
I guess it doesn't matter that much because everybody seems to understand it. That's the big win is nobody's confused about what Bootstrap is or can do for you. So I guess it doesn't really matter what you call it.
And for the most part, yeah.
It's a little bit like all those things to different people. Like to some people, it's like, it is like everything I need to build a website for my whole entire startup or whatever. And to some people it's like, oh, that's a good starting point. Oh, that's a good like wireframing tool. There's all kinds of, lots of people refer to it in many different contexts. Right.
Yeah. And I'm totally fine with that. I love that actually. Like my whole shtick about being on the internet and being a designer and building these things is I want to help awesome people do awesome things. And it's become kind of clear to me over the last few years that the best way I can do that is by building and writing HTML and CSS. So if someone like a lawyer has never built a website before and they're able to do that because of Bootstrap, that's huge. Like, you know, I lose it. I'm grinning like an idiot. And I just think that's like the best thing in the world. But if people are looking at it like, oh, here's how we don't do things, or here's what Bootstrap does wrong, or here's what they do right, I can take that. Anything like that, any level of that is just awesome by me. And I have no qualms with it. It still strikes me every time I see people using it or talking about it or anything like that. It's mm-hmm. still out of my mind. It blows my mind.
Well, being that it's such a gigantic project, you attract a lot of usage and then you also attract a lot of like haters. when like you hear or see somebody being like super hater pants about it, like Bootstrap isn't, you know, 3 kilobytes, so it's bad or something. You know, how do you take that? You're probably subject to like a massive amount of criticism, right?
Yeah, definitely. It comes from different spectrums. Like some of it's file size, yeah. Some of it's style, you know. Some people get really opinionated and care mad about certain things when it comes to front-end frameworks or front-end code and design. There's one story that I love because this guy wrote an article about how Bootstrap is the Times New Roman of design. And I stopped and I was like, at first I was maybe upset. And then I was like, wait a minute, there's got to be some way I can turn this around. So I started looking into the history of Times New Roman, the font. It turns out the Times, the paper, like over 100 years ago, actually commissioned this font to replace the current one. And it made readership like infinitely better because they could actually read the words a lot better. Nice. And I was like, you know what? If that's what Bootstrap is, I'm A-OK with that.
You're like, thanks for that excellent analogy.
Exactly, right? So that kind of stuff, I look for those kind of things. Some people, I've actually been called the Antichrist in a couple of comments. beautiful. But here's the thing about that one is like, just you the way I respond to it is like, I've made the mistake in the past of getting upset with people in issues or on Twitter or over email and things like that. And I don't want to make that mistake again because it doesn't do anybody any good. And I know that sometimes people are just maybe in a bad spot or don't have full context and things like that. So when that guy called me the Antichrist, it was in the middle of a really long paragraph. And I just waited a couple hours and he posted a follow-up. And he's like, hey, man, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I'm having a rough go with things. I'm trying to do this thing with Bootstrap and I'm trying to just get a new job and I got flustered. And so just want to say sorry about that. And I was like, hey, man, no worries. Like, just figure it out. Let me know if you need any more help. Like, it happens to the best of us. So shower them with overwhelming amounts of love and everything will be all right.
And then you're like, Beelzebub 666.
we've gotten little devil horns.
We've gotten the full spectrum of it, right? We get people that they just start calling us names. We get people, we had a lot of people reporting like spelling errors and things like that early on. And one person got really upset with us that we weren't using our copywriters. And I'm like, why aren't you guys getting this copy edited? And I was like, well, it's two guys. I don't know. Like, we got a couple other things going on too, but like, we try. But it comes from all over. And the best way to respond to it is to be positive and also know that these people are taking time to use and talk about the thing that you made, and that's still pretty cool, even if they've got nothing but bad things to say about it or you. So just try to stay positive.
Well, it's nice. That's a wonderful message that people should chew on.
We should just stop the podcast for about 10 minutes and let people let that soak in. Go ahead, Chris.
You answered a lot of my questions with the, like, you don't really care how people use it in a sense, right? Like, it's not, you know, if you use it as a way to just like look at how CSS could be structured, great. If you use it wholesale, great. If you use parts of it, great. You know, is there any way that you like kind of think is weird or bad to use it? I'd say probably the most like cliche question, if you will, that we get here at Shop Talk Show is kind of like, I'm trying to pick between this and other ones. And two is, should I use Bootstrap or should I do my own thing? Or maybe option C, should I customize Bootstrap to my own liking? And your answer to that would be like, I can't answer that perhaps, right? Or because you do whatever you want.
Yeah, I think it's still wide open. I don't think anything really in particular irks me. Like, if I stop and think, like, worst case scenario, it'd be combine Bootstrap with like four other frameworks in the same project and, you know, go that route. But I don't think many people do that. So, yeah, if you want to pull parts of it, if you want to like download the compiled CSS, which we put some time in to make sure it's like nicely formatted, if you don't want to use Less or Sass, like, go for it. If you want to just tear out some components, go for it. If you want to, it's completely open. So,
yep. But from a design perspective of Bootstrap, I'm sorry, I haven't looked at it in a while, but is there like a file that's like, if your intention is to customize it, is there like a file full of variables that you can change, or, you know, like there's different ways that you might approach something like this. Like, if you're approaching it for customizability, you might design it differently than if you, the idea was to just use it as is.
There's definitely a variables file.
Okay, good.
I like variables and I hate variables. Our variables file right now, I just opened it, it's 860 lines long. And we've got so many variables for so many different things, and people love having the variables because they can open up one file and theoretically customize most of the project, right, of Bootstrap. So, the downside to that is that there's an extra layer of abstraction to something that should be pretty approachable, pretty simple when you consider what CSS actually is, which is just, you know, static flat code, right? And so when I'm looking at something, when I'm writing some code, I have to go, this thing has a variable, go look up the variable, that variable is referencing another variable, go find that variable, change its value, see what else changes, and then go, you know, so it's a blessing and a curse, I feel like, but it's definitely useful. Mm-hmm.
Is there some source map stuff can help with that a little, huh? But maybe it's still hard to reason about, you might say.
Well, the source maps helps for when you're like doing the development like in browser and things like
in
that.
Browser,
yeah, but when I'm like fixing bugs and I need to like write a new variable right. or see where a variable is used and stuff like that, it just adds a little bit extra load cognitively and just emotionally yep. to go through and like try to work through things.
Cool. So this Bootstrap stuff might come up as we answer some questions we'll get to in a minute, but you do other things as well. Is there anything, you know, I think you had a big post fairly recently about issues at GitHub. That was kind of your baby, or at least some of the front end stuff of it was, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That project was actually started by one of the developers here, Zach Holman. He's the one that actually did the initial design work. I joke with him, but it's not far off, is that I call him my number one product designer. Just because he's got great ideas, he pushes back. Like he's a software engineer, but he's got a great insight and be able to ask questions. And a lot of our engineers here do too. So, but yeah, issues was great. It was a really long project. It had its ups and downs, but I think what we came out at the end with is a lot better than what we had before. It was fun to work on. It was fun to rewrite all the code for it and do more design work. And I've got so many screenshots of all the iterations sitting on my laptop. But
nice.
I work on issues a lot. I work on pull requests as much as I can. One of my other really favorite projects that we did last year was split diffs on GitHub. So you got your code side by side. That was huge. That took a little bit of time, but it was awesome. I loved working on that stuff.
Cool.
I used all those features this week.
Nice. Yeah.
Me too. I love the. I live in issues. It's so good now.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time on issues and the web notifications.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't really think of how big of a deal that is for you, really, because you not only just work on issues as part of your job, but then also then go live in issues as part of Bootstrap and your other open source stuff. So it kind of matters to you, especially how nice the experience of issues is.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I experience on GitHub that I think other people experience, but just not to the same degree. I mean, there are a lot of huge projects like Rails and jQuery have way more contributors than Bootstrap does, just in terms of number of people who have pushed code to it. But we definitely still have a really high volume of issues. We have a lot of people committing via forks and things like that. So it's all over the place. But yeah, I use a lot of it a lot.
Nice. And Dave, you were looking at WTF forms, right? That's
yeah, I was
one
on
of Mark's project.
Yeah, I was just coding, I forget, like a custom select box. And I was like, this has to have been done. And I was having in IE9, it will show its like little drop down menu thing, like by default. And you have to like overwrite it with some weird media query. And it was on WTFforms.com. And I was just like, this is wonderful. This just saved me hours. So it was cool. I just was like, if this exists, then whatever, rip things out. So
it's cool. Kind of a way to override some form stuff, right? Or what's the deal with it?
It's like IE9 feature detection through a media query, basically, right?
I mean, but what about the whole project?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the project is friendly. I call it friendlier HTML form controls with a little CSS magic. And it works in IE9 and up. And basically, it was an exercise because I've been asked to do custom forms in Bootstrap for a while, like custom checkboxes, radio buttons, select menus, file input. What a beast. Yeah. But a lot of people want that because it's just so poorly designed, from our perspective, at least, visually, across so many browsers. So I just tried it out and had a couple ideas and made that. The select menu is definitely the doozy of the bunch. There's so many oddities across Firefox and IE, versions of IE. The progress bar is kind of funny, too, because if you want IE9 support, you have to put a div inside the progress element. So you have, like, nested progress bars, but the outer one doesn't render. So this is great for me to do for a number of reasons. One, it, like, exercised a couple different chops for me, and I was able to actually take the time to write down all the quirks and actually like message those to people about how I built it. So it was pretty interesting for me just to like walk through and do that. And hopefully it's going to be part of Bootstrap 4 when we release that soon.
Nice. Yeah. it's well designed. I like all the consideration to it. It's not too much, right? And it's totally semantic markup, but yet you get all the fancy. You get the ability to style these things, which is, you know, constantly people are wanting.
Yeah, CSS is pretty great, and then you can do so many different things so many different ways, and largely that's all semantic markup. There's a couple of like spans in there that you need because you can't do generated right. content off of an input like before and after, but mm-hmm. otherwise it's pretty much accessible. I think I'm pretty good on that. We had a couple pull requests for that lately, but it's all based off of inputs and labels. It's got focus states, it's got active and hover states, so I tried to be as thorough as I could, and it's scalable.
Oh,
SVG like, icons.
Oh, well done. I think this will kind of persistently be a problem because I think the deal is that the spec almost never dictates like how things should look, right? So thus they stay away from things like what pseudo selectors should be available on things like this because they don't care, you know, it's just not part of the spec process. So but obviously it matters and developers want it. So browsers put it in their own kind of proprietary way sometimes, you know, like the appearance property is so weird and it's tough territory. I'm glad you've sorted it all out there or at least made some good progress on it. And not for just one. I'm always impressed when people like figure out how to do one of them, you know, and you get them all done here.
Yeah, I tried. Yeah. The file menu is not complete in that like it doesn't show the actual file name.
Yeah, it doesn't show the file name.
But I mean, better than nothing for a lot of people, and that's okay.
Yeah, and you know, like how vital is that? I don't know. Depends on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's going to be a conference coming up where people are going to be talking about all kinds of confusing situations. I'm segueing here now into an ad. We should have like a drum or some kind of yeah. Anyway, but the URL there is the rwdsummit.com. It is an online conference you can attend from anywhere in the world with a laptop and an internet connection, I suppose. And, you know, you watch the speakers speak live and participate in the chat room and do the whole thing. And it's from Environments for Humans. It's a 3-day conference, you know, hang out all day in there, listen to Dave and me talk about stuff and a bunch of other people you'll be familiar with from the show. It's coming up March 10th through 12th. Yeah, it's going to be sweet. Talking about all kinds of RWD concerns. I'll be talking about SVG something or another. I'm working up some new stuff for it, you know. It'll be, you know, it might be one of the first times I ever give a new talk to. Dave will, I think, talking about RWD bloat, a fantastic topic where kind of myth busts some stuff. And there's just so much, there's going to be so much to do and talk about and stuff. And, you know, it's less expensive because you don't have to fly there. You don't have to get a hotel room. And you can save 20% off anyway by using coupon code ShopTalk. So join us at the RWD Summit.
I like how you can get it. Like buy a room ticket and just broadcast it in some room in your office.
I know more conferences or more businesses should do that. They should just be like, hey, this wasn't that, you know, considering what companies pay to spend people to send to conferences at all. Just be like, hey, we bought this conference. If anybody wants to go sit in this room and watch it, it's available. You know, like it would be a trivial expense to a large company. So do that, companies.
Do you know how much it costs to fly Dave Rupert to your building to talk to you for an hour? It's like half a bill. Half a bill? Yeah, at least. And you're getting it. Yeah. Yeah.
You could do this for a couple $100 otherwise. Let's get into some Q&A, shall we?
Yeah. Here we go. Joe Scopino writes in, in your experience, when you're building a responsive layout, do you use only one version of HTML markup and use CSS media queries to get the rest of the job done? Or do you use JavaScript or other libraries to move HTML elements around to achieve different layouts? This is where I struggle because I know CSS is supposed to control the style and layout of elements. However, the order of the HTML affects the layout of the document. I can handle basic layout changes with media queries, but if something that required a different order of HTML element, a different order of HTML elements, I would be stumped. Any experience? I think the situation is Joe's trying to, let's come up with something. Move an advertisement up the page. That's kind of the classic one. Or, I don't know. I think maybe like you're trying to put a footer in a sidebar or something like that.
Interdigitation is one. Hey, you know what they're talking about, right, Mark? Is there situations in Bootstrap where you have to fiddle around like this?
With layout, using JavaScript to change the layout or things like that? No, we haven't had to do anything like that. But as far as like fiddling with the layout, we do get into trouble because on Bootstrap we have like the main column, like in our docs even we have the main column of content, and on the right we have this really long menu of all these components, and it's got two or three levels in there. And it's like you can't just show that and put it either on one side or the other on your mobile phone or anything like that. So I definitely run into some layout problems like that, and I wish I had more control over where they appear. Flexbox actually helps with some of those things, where you can change the order around if you can reverse those things. And you can even...
Yeah, it can do reversing. Grid will be even better, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you do need that, the chances are you can support those kind of things with Flexbox.
Yeah. Joe, I have done it occasionally, and I know what you mean. Like, even picture, like, the Shop Talk Show website now, where it's just kind of two columns on the left and right. Imagine we had an ad at the bottom of the sidebar, right? And then we do the classic thing where we squish the columns into one, and we put the header on the sidebar kind of becomes the header on the top of a one-column site. And let's say that ad is just, like, too much. We actually want the ad below everything. It's like, we may be able to do some Flexbox magic there, and nothing pops to mind easily. It just seems like it would be a heck of a lot easier if we could just take that ad and just kind of move it in the HTML elsewhere, and then and then it would just kind of be at the bottom. It, you know, if you got to use a little JavaScript to do that, I don't have a huge problem with that generally, just because the you know, if the JavaScript doesn't run, it's not exactly a disaster. The ad's just not exactly where you want it to be, or you could just hide it or something. You know, everything's a trade-off. There's ways that you can kind of pull this type of stuff off. And, you know, Joe, if you're totally afraid of JavaScript, this type of thing, you know, taking an element and just, you know, removing it, you know, cloning it and adding it to somewhere else, and that type of stuff is some, definitely some jQuery 101. So I wouldn't be too afraid of that. You'll probably learn how to do that in the first third of any JavaScript book out there.
Yeah, I definitely wish this kind of stuff was baked into HTML and CSS by default. Definitely run into those things, especially with ads or any kind of nav and headers and things like that, where you need to move them around. Definitely can be a pain.
It should indeed. It should be easier, and it will be. I think grid is a big jump, and the other one. What was the one that got dropped?
Figures?
Regions. The content flow regions. Yeah,
regions. That would have helped us out. But didn't make.
So Joe, you know, do what you got to do. There's a way to do it. Another Joe writes in, I'm using AngularJS to build a website, and I'm looking for good libraries to pretty it up. It seems like my choices would be A, Bootstrap, B, Angular UI, C, jQuery UI. So this just came in. This came in yesterday. So this isn't like, you know, this is like, this is kind of, Joe represents some kind of modern thinking here, I think, a little bit. Joe's kind of perhaps he's on a new wave of a new type of JavaScript developer. And when he's building a site, maybe he's not a designer, doesn't think of himself at that all the way. He's just like, which one of these things should I pick? Right? I think that's common. And it's kind of one of the lives that Bootstrap lives, is it's become one of these options that people just pick. Is that how Joe should be thinking about this, or I don't know. Do we have any thoughts on?
I would say it always depends. If your choice is between Bootstrap and, say, jQuery UI, I would say go Bootstrap, only because it's got more things than jQuery UI. Last I looked, I don't think jQuery UI does a lot of, like, global typography or gives you, like, if the less source code or SAS source code and those kind of things. So I would go one of those kind of directions for a framework if you just need the front end aspect of it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, because he specifically said pretty it up, you know, and as much as, you know, that might make a true designer kind of cringe or whatever, Bootstrap is going to give you more pretty than jQuery UI will, which is I typically put in the more of a bucket of, like, I need, you know, things to be draggable and droppable and resizable, and I need dialogues and stuff. And it gives you some UI, but it's not, it doesn't give you a UI for everything else as well, which sounds like you'll need, Joe. And I don't know anything about Angular UI. I'm aware that it exists, but
I think it's just a Bootstrap wrapper to some degree.
Yeah, they definitely have Bootstrap in there.
Yeah, Bootstrap, right?
Yep. That's where my expertise stops, by the way, too.
Okay. Good. It's Joe, if you're in Angular land anyway, that's probably your better bet than raw Bootstrap, because it is Bootstrap.
Yeah.
I was even going to say, you may want to just download Bootstrap and play with it, because it sounds like I feel like if you're going to try and play with it inside your app, you're kind of fighting two things, like making your app work and learning Bootstrap. So I would probably abstract, like, use Bootstrap and whatever, like on CodePen or something, you know, and like just try to make the view that you're trying to make, like kind of make that abstraction and then roll it into your app. That's what I'd recommend. So, because it sounds like you just want to play around at prettying things up. And I mean, Bootstrap or Foundation or any of these would be a pretty good start for if you don't have any design chops. All right.
Sounds like decent advice for Joe. Let me just get our other, do our other sponsor quick, and then we'll get to some more Q&A here. And that's this Envision app. This is the first time they've ever sponsored Shop Talk Show. And I'm glad to have them, because apparently I'm behind the times. A lot of people use this, and it's like a majorly well done app. The URL is Envision, like invisionapp.com. And then the URL, if you want to take advantage of the free stuff, is invisionapp.com/signup/shop talk. But what it is a prototyping, collaboration, workflow kind of thing. Like, you can prototype inside of here and then have your whole team there and talk about design, or get your own designs there and use this thing as the place where you do the talking with your team and getting sign off and communicating what should be changed and what's okay and what's ready for the client to see and all that type of stuff. It looks incredibly well designed. Of course, it has all the like mobile considerations in there too. Like, this is the design in this format and this format and this size and this capabilities and whatever. The team features look really good. That, like, the drawing and editing and commenting and all that stuff is all kind of baked in. You can talk to people live. You can like have your meeting in Envision app. Pretty cool. So it's all about, you know, it's about design and talking about design and enabling your team to talk about design. It looks extremely good. I'm about to kind of undertake some team design effort stuff, and I'm totally going to use it because it looks like a good place. I imagine there's people on Earth whose like job it is to like work in Envision, essentially, because there's so many tools in here that I'm sure it's like a kind of a project manager's dream in a way. Design project manager. Look at the, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes you like scroll down on websites like this, and there's like that row of company icons, and you almost kind of roll your eyes, like, oh my god, every company has the row of icons of companies that use it. But they kind of take it a step further. I mean, like, there's lots of companies on here that that are admirable in their design work, and then they have like actual interviews with the people who use them at these big companies. So it's not just BS. You know, it's not like at CodePen where like, look, somebody at Microsoft signed up for an account, immediately get the Microsoft logo on the homepage. Mm-hmm. You know, or it's really just some intern signed up for it somewhere. These are like the actual designers at these companies using Envision. So anyway, it looks really cool. I can't wait to use it. And you can use it for free for 3 months at envisionapp.com/signup/shop talk. Let's do some more questions.
We have one from Flo Pray Not, I believe. Flexbox has got great browser support now. Plus, nobody gives a toss about IE9. Equals, any plans of adding Flexbox to Bootstrap?
That was just for you, Mark. Do you use any Flexbox in there?
Not currently. I would love to use Flexbox in V4, but I don't think I will. There's a number of huge changes coming for the next version of Bootstrap. And I think adding Flexbox, we're dropping IE8 support. And so to support IE9, you do need a polyfill for Flexbox. And I don't think I want to burden people with that just yet. And using floats and things like that, and inline block and table cell to achieve certain things that Flexbox lets you do now, only to, for a large part, a lesser extent, is going to be what we need to do. just because we need to support a lot of people and a lot of people doing different things that maybe the rest of us haven't gotten to yet. I was trying to explore a way that we could toggle between the standard Bootstrap grid that we have today with floats and the Flexbox version by maybe having some kind of global variable that you can flip. That's going to be a lot of extra code to write, and I don't know if I want to maintain that and maintain essentially two versions of a lot of components, and especially like a mission critical one like the grid. But there's like a Flexbox grid. I forgot the URL. I think it's like FlexGrid or something like that. Or flexboxgrid.com maybe. One of them has, it's flexboxgrid.com. They have a Flexbox grid that actually has the same classes as Bootstrap. So you can actually just take out Bootstrap's grid and replace it with this, and you've got Flexbox. And I think that we'll have the same classes for the most part in V4 in future versions. So hopefully there's always going to be people that are looking at, hey, I don't like that aspect of Bootstrap, this larger project. Here's a different way to do it. And I definitely want to encourage that. And so hopefully in V5, I guess, we can switch to Flexbox, and hopefully that's not as far off as the previous major rewrites.
Nice. Yeah. It would just, you know, I guess what would be the advantages of it? I guess one of them is it's probably less code, you know, less gutter calculation and stuff like that. And then the ability to change order is pretty cool. But it's probably not, you know, like because you've already done all the hard work of having a float-based grid in Bootstrap, it's not like you don't get worlds more with Flexbox, really. It's mostly a developer concern, I would think.
Yeah, I think doing different things where you're changing the order or the alignment of things is especially useful. And that's way more difficult with floats and stuff like that.
Right.
But like if you wanted to, if you all you needed was like, say, vertical alignment in addition to these grids, like I actually did an experiment where I made a table-based grid. It still uses divs, but it uses display table cell. And you can do vertical alignment then. And you can actually do your gutters with cell padding and things like that. So it's a weird approach, but it kind of works. So there's all, like, it depends on what you need in your project. If you need the browser support, don't go for Flexbox. If you need it to be super performant, stick with floats, or if you do inline block and anything like that. But there's pros and cons. I would love to use Flexbox stuff. I remember I was looking into the first stab at taking a stab at implementing in Bootstrap, and I stumbled on the CSS tricks page that has all the properties outlined and all the use cases basically, and that was pretty huge.
Nice.
But maybe in the future.
Yeah, you heard it here first, people. V5. It's gonna happen.
I always, when I get into Flexbox, I feel like, I am so powerful. This is so awesome. And then I get into like Flex Shrink and Flex Grow and all that. And it's like, I do not understand.
Yeah, mind blown.
CSS.
Mm-hmm. Flex Basis is my favorite one.
Oh, God. What's that
do? It's kind of like Width, Dave, but it's different.
That's my Tina Belcher.
Bob's Burgers, Tina.
I love that show, that's by the great. Way.
This actually flows right into a good question by Ryan S. here, who says, there is no debate that the table element and its children in HTML are not appropriate for layout design for many reasons. He says the most significant being semantics. We might say that source order is an issue there too with tables and perhaps some accessibility stuff. However, has the jury decided the merits of using display table cell, etc. in CSS to provide layout for HTML elements? It sounds like that's just what you're talking about, Mark, right? Like you've explored this territory. Do you have any qualms about exploiting those display properties when needed?
I don't at all. There was this interview question that we asked at Twitter, and I came up with it after spending a day trying to solve this thing where the only solution is actually to use tables to an extent. And this goes back, you know, supporting IE7 and stuff like that. But we use display table cell and display table for a couple of things in Bootstrap right now. One, if you want what we call a justified nav. So if you want your navigation to take up the full width and your links within that to be equal width, we use display table cell. And then you can use display, or you do use table layout fixed, and you can get the automatic layout for that. And it's really fast to lay out because browsers have been doing tables for I don't know how long since they
right. were, especially when it's fixed, because then it doesn't, it just, exactly. it just obeys your command.
Yeah, so if you don't know what I meant by table layout fixed, it's for the listeners out there, it's a CSS property that basically tells the browser that everything in this table, after the browser reads the first row of the table, it knows how to lay out the rest of the table. So it lays it out way faster than having to scan the whole table, build it, and then relay out things. So it's super performant in that regard. That makes less sense for, like, say, a single row site where you have one row, your left column, and your main column, or something like that. But it's just as viable. It's just different ways to do it. Floats have their own things where you have collapsing margins, you have to clear them and things like that, but you don't have to do any of that with a table layout. You do your thing.
Right. If display table can do the same, can achieve the layout that you're going for, and as a side bonus, you can use more semantic elements. Like, for example, you have a main container that you set to display table, and you're going for left sidebar, right sidebar, and it's the world's simplest layout that will never get more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. And you have your section be display table cell, and your aside be a table cell. Go for it. You know, that's nicely semantic. You're able to exploit the display possibilities of it. It doesn't help you with, you know, in a sense, you're just being a little bit more semantic than a table element, though. It's kind of like it doesn't solve any of the problems with table as they were, like with source order, for example. It doesn't necessarily help you with that. So you're kind of just, you know, using a table element with a little bit better semantics. It's not like incredible, everybody should start doing this. It's still a friggin' table.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's do some more here.
You got coming.
One picked out, Dave?
Yeah, I got one from James Finn for CSS plugins like Bootstrap, which, again, calling it just a CSS plugin is very, very interesting to me.
I haven't heard plugin in a while. That's a good one.
What it is to James. We have Adi Asmani's UnCSS. I was wondering if there was an equivalent for jQuery. We all go the extra mile to shave packet sizes as much as we can. I'm tired of shipping the entire jQuery just to use a plugin. This is obviously not the way of the future. What are your recommendations aside from keeping it plain vanilla, accepting their weight? Front-end JS libraries like jQuery are very handy for noobs like me. Thanks so much, James.
So what James is saying is you take this whole Bootstrap library, for example, and let's say you want to trim out the stuff that you're not using in it or whatever. There is that UnCSS, Adi Asmani. We're having him on an upcoming show, actually, so it'll be interesting to ask him this. And theoretically, what that does is yank out all of the unused CSS in there. So that would be interesting to talk about. But James is actually asking about, like, is there something that can shave out all the unused jQuery, too? Which I'm not sure that there is, but do either of you know?
I don't know anything off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't know either. Mark, what's your typical JavaScript methodology? Are you the golden hammer, or are you the never use JavaScript? I don't know. It should never template anything ever. What side of that fence are you on?
I ride the spectrum. I go from side to side every now and then. For the most part, I say don't write JavaScript if you don't have to. Like, people should write less JavaScript. And I say that in the context of frameworks, like, say, in Bootstrap. For almost everything that you use that has JavaScript backing it, you don't need to write JavaScript to use it. You write HTML. You use data attributes on the elements to tell it what to toggle and things like that. At GitHub, we have abstracted classes that start with JS, JS-collapse or something like that, right? So where you need it, you can use those kind of things. But as far as, like, customizing those things any further, not really sure. You don't need to use UnCSS to customize Bootstrap to pull out what you don't need. If you know you're not using a component, by the way, you can just remove the at import in the less files and recompile, and you won't have it anymore. So
cool. Yeah, that sounds smart. I always thought UnCSS was a little weird. No offense, Addie, but it's kind of like how deep of an analysis of your website can it really use? The whole point of CSS is that it applies to many documents. It's an abstraction of design away from that. So in order to properly use it, you'd have to analyze every single document that pulls in that CSS file to make sure that it's not used. And it seems like the default is to kind of test it against one document.
Yeah,
I guess if that was your style guide.
I was gonna say at GitHub we don't use UnCSS, but one of our engineers wrote a series of tests that basically looks at our CSS and then looks at all of our views in our Rails app. GitHub.com is a Rails app, and basically if it finds a class in the class attribute that's not used anywhere in our CSS, it fails the build. So you can't actually merge into master if you are adding code that's not used anywhere. And the flip side is there, too. If we were writing CSS that's not used in any single view, then we fail the build. So it's a good indicator that says, hey, you've got unused things over here.
Oh, it goes both ways.
Yeah.
Wow. So just to get that straight, if you put a class on an HTML element that isn't used, it gets flagged. Or if you write a CSS selector that doesn't match anything, it gets flagged.
Yes, sir.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
It has a couple of limitations, process. But yeah, it's part of the build. We fail the build if you're adding things that aren't used. It's pretty awesome.
How long does that take? I mean, because how many views are in GitHub? I mean, you're in the multiple dozens for sure. Like, let's say 36 views.
I don't know. So I've got a pull request. I don't know for exactly off the top of my head, but I'll give you an example. I'm replacing the buttons across all of GitHub right now. And it touched them with 600 files. So at least 600, I want to say, different actual views, files in the views folder. So it's super useful. There are some limitations, like you can't go into deep nesting and stuff like that. At least it doesn't right now. But it takes care of the bulk of it. And that's super fun. Super exciting to be able to have that. It doesn't take long to run, though. Our tests run in like a minute and a half for all of GitHub.
Wow, and that's like... all your functional, all your unit, all your...
Yeah, that's all of our CI on our pull request before we merge them.
It takes me 1 minute to save a CSS file. That's great. Okay. Jeez.
To James's question, I don't know, pulling... If it's part of a build process, I kind of like that, right? Like I like the idea of that's like, oh, I'm going to... Because this is going out for production...
Yeah,
I can programmatically pull out things that aren't used. That's kind of neat, but it's kind of like, but if it's anything other than that, it seems scary to me. Like, jQuery, I happen to not be using like, you know, wrap outer. So I'm just going to remove that from jQuery because that's like 1 kilobyte of size in there. That seems a little weird to me.
Yeah, the other thing to note too about it is jQuery has there's a lot of CDNs out there, so if you need to, like, you can just use that and take advantage of some caching from those kind of services. So I think it's less of an issue, especially the newer versions of jQuery are a lot smaller and things like that. But if you're starting to pull that kind of stuff out, like, I would never go down that route. But I'm not a JavaScript person, so that would just scare the crap out of me.
Yeah, it scares me too. Like, oh, that's alt, you know, like, oh, I'm not you. It's like digging into WordPress internals. You know, it always makes people shiver. Let's see.
There's a like jQuery builder. You can build different versions of jQuery.
Is that endorsed by them? I remember MooTools used to have that. They used to tout that as one of their big features.
Yeah, I think whatchamacallit, jQuery was built in a modular sense that you could, like, if you're not using their Ajax, you could rip out their Ajax, but it's all pretty interconnected and stuff like that. But you could go through, there's this little, I put it in the chat room, but it's a jQuery builder. Just search for it. But you could remove everything you don't think you're using, download the file, put it in your project. And if your project still runs, sweet. You like, but you're not shaving off like super amounts. Like, that's the thing. That's what gets really kind of weird.
That's some micro-optimization territory.
Yeah, because jQuery... like minified and gzipped is 28K. It's significant and it takes a long time to execute on mobile, but it's not end of the world level.
I'm a fan.
Oh, and then, sorry, this is worth mentioning. Scott Gell from Filament Group has a thing called Shoestring JS, which is like a build your own jQuery kind of thing. And it mimics that API almost exactly. So,
that's neat with just less features.
Yeah. Or it's like you just kind of piece your build together. You're like, using like wrap and Ajax. So this is what I need. So
cool. Shoestring. We'll put the link in the show notes. John Higgins writes in, I'm building a gallery web page with sorting. So I don't know, Pinterest, I guess. I'm going to have a lot of images, thousands. I obviously don't want it to take forever to load. What's the best way to design this so that it will run efficiently? So imagine you're trying to build a one-page website, I guess, with potentially thousands of images on it. Certainly you wouldn't put 1,000 image tags in the HTML, right? What are John's options here?
Well, you would either have to go...
Infinite scroll?
Yeah, infinite scroll, or you would want to just paginate. It's amazing actually how many people want to keep everything on one page and that one smooth experience. But in my infinite scrolling is great. Like, unless you're trying to, this was a problem for me on Facebook. It was great because like everything would just keep loading, but I kept trying to get to a link in their footer, and the footer just kept disappearing on me. I was like, oh my god, let me click this link. I had to use the inspector to disable the page and then go find it.
Nice.
The inspector again,
I want to start a show on. On web dev nerds that solve their own problem, like they're trying to pay their AT&T bill and they're in the inspector, like just changing classes and stuff. Like, this is too hard to do. I'm going to fix it right now.
Yeah.
I've had to pop into my bank's website and pull off a disabled class to submit.
I did that on my benefits thing the other day. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. That should be a little Tumblr or something. What's cool about pagination is that you could build the app such that it runs with no JavaScript at all, right? You could
exactly.
You could take a total progressive enhancement approach to this, Josh or John, by just building it that way, you know, page one, page two, page three, and then that's what you could base your infinite scroll off of. Just don't have a footer, or that's what you could build your, you know, that's what you could Ajax for. Just Ajax for page two and append them to the bottom. I wonder if, you know, thousands. I wonder if, you know, literally you said thousands. So I wonder at what point that becomes too heavy in the DOM too. Like, what does a web page feel like that literally does have 1,000 image tags on it? No matter what, you know, whether they're Ajaxed in or what, does that get heavy at some point? I'm sure it does.
I would imagine so. Like
memory
yeah.
usage.
So you
might want to consider pulling ones off the top as you do it.
That's a trick that people do. They pop them off the top and then like set a margin. But then you have more JavaScript to kind of watch that scroll too, to like pop them back.
Yeah, you got
to
put them back. Yeah.
There was like a, I could guarantee if you put any more than, I don't know, 20 images, it'll crash my iPad. So careful out there.
I like that we left John with progressive enhancement being the nicest way to handle this, so let's maybe just leave it at that. One very last quick one and then we'll wrap things up. Mark Talbot writes in, is there a reason that Google Fonts uses HTTP rather than HTTPS? All of Google Code's examples use HTTP, however HTTPS seems to work fine. What's up with that? I guess I haven't looked in a while, but I think, Mark, you're right. If it's rather than actually fight this battle, isn't it smarter to just link to all that crap with protocol relative URLs and just not even deal with it?
Yeah, I would go relative as much as you can. I remember, I think in Bootstrap, we hit a bug for some protocol-less thing. Today, we err on the side of HTTPS as much as possible. I know that can sometimes be a little bit slower, but... I don't know why Google Fonts does all that, honestly. I've never actually noticed.
I don't know.
It might be a speed thing. Google Fonts are, a lot of them are really optimized for performance. If you compare them side by side with, say, Typekit and things like that, I've found Google Web Fonts to be way faster.
Oh, I know. It's sad for me to admit it, but I've had to switch everything over to just use Google Font stuff because it is so wicked fast.
Yeah.
And everything else just feels so sluggish to me, especially if you pick, you know, like use like Open Sans or whatever. It's just this tiny little font file too. It just screams. It's
yeah, exactly.
Good chance of it being cached. Ooh, yeah, I love it.
My reason would be is probably just speed and performance.
It might be speed, although I was at the recent Google conference and they were saying that this, like the slowness of HTTPS is kind of a myth. It's like, it's true in a sense that there's some additional handshaking stuff that has to happen, but it's also a prerequisite for lots of like Spitty and HTTP2 and maybe not all the techno. I don't have all the details on it. We should get somebody on to talk about it properly, but there, you know, there's things that you can do with HTTPS that make it faster.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't doubt that Google's on top of all that stuff. So it's curious that Google Fonts is a little bit behind. And it's curious that I think Google uses protocol relative URLs here and there. Like, I think that but Google Analytics has switched over to them and stuff. I wonder if they're just like behind the times, you know, just a little bit, or maybe you're right. Maybe it is a straight up speed thing, but it seems dangerous to be throwing people out HTTP URLs when you're the one saying HTTPS everywhere, because it's going to throw an insecure content warning.
Yeah, if you have a mixed content warning, that can happen too. I pasted a link in the chat room, by the way, HTTP versus VS, HTTPS.com. And it runs a little test. I don't know how scientific it is, but it's interesting that this site shows that HTTPS is faster. I'd err on HTTPS everywhere. It might be a little bit slower, but I mean, security.
Yeah, well, that's where the world's going. And yeah. I like that Google has even kind of hinted at, you know, you get better SEO if you do it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what gets people talking, you know? I'm making steps to get there at CSS Tricks. It should be a couple of weeks. I don't know. I can't promise anything, but yeah, I'm getting there. It's a little harder on CodePen because anybody can link to any resource they want to. So the chances of us like never having any insecure content warnings or mixed content warnings is tough. So I'm not sure how we'll be able to do it at CodePen, but maybe someday. Anyway, what else do you got, Dave? You want to...
I think we'll wrap it up here. Mark, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. If people aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that? And then what's the one big thing you'd like to plug before you go?
You can follow me on Twitter at MDO. Just head there. Plug anything? Man, I got nothing.
Anything. It can be anything.
JS Ben. Only because we've been talking about CodePen, it's been on my mind.
All right. There you go.
Sorry, that's my typical cruel joke. I apologize.
No, I'll take it. JSPen is a fine web app. Much to be learned from Remy and the gang.
I love all of them. I see those things all the time in issues. Like, people link to CodePen, to Plunker, to JSPen, JSBus, Fiddle. I get them all. So I love them. I wish we had our own at GitHub.
Reduced test case or GTFO.
I got one for sale. It's $2 billion though.
$2 billion.
$2 billion. $2 billion for code. Old roller. We already got GitHub integration.
Nice.
Okay.
All right. Hey, thanks everyone. Thanks, Mark, so much for coming on. And thank you guys for coming in, girls, coming out in the chat room and chatting and giving us facts. We really appreciate it. Thank you for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to star heart, rate us up. That's how people find out about our show. And yeah, and if you want to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show, be sure to go there. And if you're looking to change your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs because lots of companies are looking for what you do, and it's powered by CodePen.
Ha-ha. Right on.
Chris, you got anything else you'd like to share?
Well, just shoptalkshow.com.